What's happening? This is 9/11. This is a VG podcast. You know how we do it. Let's get to it. So today I am honored to bring on my guest, who is a business owner, a Marine veteran, a nurse practitioner, and I'm honored to call her family. So welcome to the show, Ev. How you doing?
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm doing well. Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here. I love how you represent us. I love how you represent us from our hometown in a positive light. You are doing great things. I pray God's blessings over this podcast and that it blows up. I'm declaring and decreeing that this will be the number one podcast.
Hey, I received that. I appreciate that. And like she say, we represent our class. Just to let y'all know, full disclosure, this is my family member, but we also are classmates. We graduated from Peabody 9-7. So shout out class of 9-7. I always like to show my team, my cold class love. You know, we a family. We tight.
That's it.
So what's been going on? So we're going, because like I said, you're a nurse practitioner now. You did military and all this. So let's rewind it back to when we first left those halls of Peabody, because that's when we first, everybody kind of branched off and started doing their own thing. So when you first left Peabody, I'm going to let you take it from there. Catch us up.
I left Peabody in 97. I went to Northwestern for 2 years, majored in nursing. And I'll be honest with you, I just was not settled. I went through a period of depression and I left. I went, joined the Marine Corps, didn't tell anybody. Told my mom and my dad.
That was it? Yeah.
I went to talk to a recruiter, and that's how I joined the military.
Now look, let me stop you right there, because now when people don't know, it's levels to this military stuff. So when somebody say they've done Marines, like people that's in the military, it's a different level of respect. Our eyebrows kind of like, okay, you like, you really did this. What made you choose Marines? Because you were always kind of laid back.
I know, quiet.
How the Marines come about?
Everybody was shocked and surprised. I told myself, I said, if I'm going to be owned by Uncle Sam, I'm going to be owned by the best.
That's what I did.
And I did it because people told me what I couldn't do. If you tell me what I can't do, I'm going to show you what I will do. And you need to go to the Air Force. Air Force is for women. I'll go to the Navy. No, I'm going to go to the Marine Corps. So that's what I did. I was one of the few proud in the Marines. I was one of the 5% because the Marine Corps at that time, only 5% of us were women. And that includes officers and enlisted. There was 174,000 Marines worldwide, and 8,000 of those were women.
Now, that's what I wanted to tell you, too, because that is a very male-dominant branch of the military. So how was it, like, as far as, like, advancing? And what was your experience as far as just being a Marine?
So being a Marine is one thing. Being a woman Marine is completely different, because a lot of the older male Marines were not used to being around or having served around female Marines. They did not, they didn't understand that they had to change some of the language. You, you can't talk about certain things around women because, you know, it could be considered sexual harassment. But it was different. I had to find my place as a woman Marine and then as a black woman Marine.
Gotcha.
Whole different ball game. Whole different ball game, you know. But I matriculated through the Marine Corps. I started off in Parris Island, South Carolina for boot camp. I went to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina for my MOS school, and I ended up being stationed in Yuma, Arizona for 2 years. For my first duty station. I was a maintenance management specialist. I love the West Coast.
We took a vacation out there. I can see why.
I love the West Coast. One of my best friends was stationed in San Diego, which is 2 hours away from Yuma, Arizona. And so at the weekend, I would sit that highway through the mountains headed to San Diego. I was out there so much, some of the guys were like, why can't I want to see you on the weekend? I was out there every weekend. I enjoyed my time on the West Coast. And then my last year, I got ordered to Okinawa, Japan. And so I spent my last year in Japan.
So how long did you serve overall?
4 years. I did 4 years of active. And of course, you know, when you sign up during a contract, you got to do 4 years of inactive.
Gotcha.
So I did 4 years of inactive reserve. And so actually before, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I got a letter in the mail asking if I would come back. Because they said it was easier to have, and you know, they invest all the money into training me than to have to train somebody.
Start
else.
Over. So gotcha.
I'm not doing it. I was already in nursing school, so I said, no, I'm not doing it. So I did it. I'm glad I did it. I got a wealth of experience and a wealth of knowledge and friends, like you know.
For a lifetime.
Military, whole different level of friendship.
Whole different level. Yep.
Yeah, whole different level of friendship. So I got people that I haven't seen them for 20 years, but they call me right now. We're going to talk like we just left each other's presence, you know?
Exactly.
So that's how it is. I got out of the Marine Corps in 2003, and I went back to Northwestern. I went to LSUA for a year, and then I went back to Northwestern because I knew that was my calling. Mm-hmm. God spoke to me while I was actually stationed in Yuma, Arizona, and gave me, he confirmed that my calling was to actually be a women's health nurse practitioner.
Got you. So. Yeah. What were some of the discrepancies you've seen in, like, with women's health, black women's health in specific? What were some of the discrepancies you've seen that you kind of just seen from afar was like, I need to get in that field and I can make a difference, especially dealing with it yourself, being a black woman?
How we're treated, how we are received. I noticed that black people, when we complain about pain, it's glossed over.
Gotcha.
And I'm not saying anything about another specific race, but if another race complains about pain, that pain is going to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Black women are not heard. Black women are seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to change that narrative. My whole goal, and I've always told myself for the last 20-something years, I want to be a bridge in the gap of quality health care.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to help bridge the equity gap. That's been my whole goal from the beginning. I want to take care of women because I'm a woman. And I've always told my patients, I'm going to take care of you like you are my mom or my sister in that bed.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you the same thing I would tell them. And so that's been my whole goal for in becoming a women's health nurse practitioner. Back up, I went to Northwestern and finished in 2007 with my Bachelor's of Science in Nursing degree.
Mm-hmm.
Moved to Lafayette, so I work in at Our Lady of Lourdes, which is a hospital. I worked on a post-op surgical unit just to get some experience, and then I ended up transitioning to women's health. I ended up working for 5 years on a high-risk OB unit, and I absolutely love high-risk OB. That is my passion. That is, I'm at home doing high-risk OB. I absolutely love it. So I did that, and then while I was working there, I went to grad school, the University of South Alabama, and I finished there in 2012. I finished my master's degree and became a board-certified women's health nurse practitioner. Now I'm back in school at the Southern University.
There you go. Okay.
I get my doctorate. Yes, I graduate December 15th with my doctorate of nursing practice. So I'll have my doctorate in nursing when I finish in December.
Well, as you can see, this woman is highly intelligent. A lot of schooling, a lot of background. It's just, so what it was like when you first initially got out in the field? Because I know everybody, you know, you had that attitude, I could change the world. And what was it like initially going out to the field and servicing our community?
Let me tell you, honestly, I found it hard, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
One, because I've had patients that tell me I look too young to do what I'm doing. So I've always had to kind of look, I'm older than I am.
I'm very confident in what I'm doing.
I'm very confident in what I'm doing. Sometimes I have to run down my resume so they can feel comfortable with me taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't always like doing that, but, you know, I don't want them to doubt that I know what I'm doing.
Gotcha.
Sometimes I've had patients request a white healthcare provider.
Wow.
And it's usually from a black person.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
That's
I've had a patient, an older black woman, tell me, she said, well, what a white woman. I saw a white woman sitting standing out there. I said, ma'am, she don't do what I do.
Exactly.
So I said, but you're more than welcome to have her come in here and talk to you if that's what you would like, but she can't do what I do.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's hard. I remember when I was working on a unit, I had on a high risk OB unit, matter of fact, I had to call the patient's doctor and say, hey, this patient is laboring, she needs to be transferred to the labor unit.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't believe. Oh, she's not laboring, she's just acting up. I know her, she does it all the time. Just give her some Tylenol. I said, this woman is in labor, so I didn't have to call her. The black OBGYN.
Yeah.
Can you come check this patient, tell this doctor that this patient is actually laboring? And so she was like, yeah, she laid. And I'm looking at the strip. Why he won't believe you? I said, I don't know. I don't know if it was because of me. And the patient was a black woman. So that's why I do what I do. I do what I do so that I could be. But our people need an advocate. Sometimes they don't know the language.
That's what I wanted to touch on. Yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying? So I tell them, I say, open your mouth. You got to talk for yourself. If I can't always be there, but I can get the language to say, to be an advocate for yourself.
That's what I wanted to ask you too, because me and my wife talk about it all the time, because of course, you know, she's L&D nurse as well. So just the advocating part, do you feel like the women in our community too? Because like, this is one of the stigmas that I try myself to kind of break away from saying, I hate using the term strong black woman because I feel like that term has been turned against or used against our community. And so when they hear strong black woman, just when the phrase is just tossed around, like you said, when you go into these doctor's offices, all this stuff that's percolating through their head, to me, that all serves like a predestined notion of what that person is. And so when I hear the word advocacy, do you feel like our community, like the women in our community, are doing a good enough job of stepping up and actually saying, or just when they get that first no or they shutting down, like what do you kind of see from behind the scenes?
Sometimes I see when people get shut down, that turns them away. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised how, and then now transitioning from a hospital to a clinic setting, you'll be surprised at how many people, once they get shut down, they don't go back again. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people only go to the doctor when they're pregnant. They don't go any other time. Yeah. They don't. So that's what I see. I see people get shut down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll go a little bit further and they'll, they don't take no for an answer. So I always tell them, you have to speak up for yourself. Mm-hmm. Call us, do something. But you have to speak up for yourself, because they're not going to believe you. They're not going to treat you the way you need to be treated. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you're not getting the adequate care, mm-hmm. then say something. Get a name.
Yeah.
Everybody has a boss.
Yeah, for real.
Everybody has a boss. Go hire them. And if you have to, write a letter to the CEO of the hospital. Mm-hmm. Get in contact with us. And if you can't, if they don't, the news outlets.
Yeah, yeah.
The news outlets.
Press them.
Somebody wants to do a story.
Yes.
You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So I encourage my patients to speak up and say something. Mm-hmm. That's what I do.
Okay. And I know you say you encourage your patients, but I also seen where you're doing a lot of, are you doing some talking around the cities you go? You have your pink talk segments and stuff like that. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about that? Some of the stuff that I know, like we don't supposed to be behind the scenes all the way on that, but just for my female listeners, just some of the things you kind of talk about and expound when you go do your seminars and talk on that.
So I, in 2000, it was before the pandemic, so it was around 2018 or 19, I can't remember the year, mm-hmm. I started a program called the Pink Talk. And mm-hmm. I did it because, in speaking with a lot of the women that I see, women were not taught adequate feminine hygiene. The things that they were taught is outdated, it's mm-hmm. not good. Women are taught to use certain things that back in the day our grandmothers used, and it's only because they didn't know anything.
They didn't know, gotcha.
Okay, down, and mm-hmm. it's causing problems. And so when I try to explain that to them, they said, well, my grandmother, my mom, I said, you know what? I'm going to have something called a pink talk. Mm-hmm. So I got together another couple of OBGYNs at my clinic. We got together for the very first one. It was a brunch style talk. And I discussed feminine hygiene from, the teenage or the preteen age all up to menopause. Because it's something at every stage of life women should do or they should not be doing. And so a lot of the things that they're taught, simple things as far as making sure you're wearing underwear that have a cotton seat. Mm-hmm. You know, and wear thongs all the time.
Yeah.
they just did not know.
Just didn't know.
Things that I see them in practice, like people that I call them a repeat offenders, because mm-hmm. they keep doing the same thing. I'm like, look, I'm just going to have a big talk. And so I did it a couple of times, and then the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of had to shut it down. My nurse keeps, it's time for another pink talk. I'm like, I know it is. I just, I had to put it on pause while I was in school because school, became overwhelming.
Exactly.
But thankful to God, I'm, finishing in December. And after that, I want to pick it back up and start having the pink talk. Pink talk again.
Got it. Now look, like you say, these are traditions or stuff that was passed down generation to generation. Now, our people, are we kind of pig-headed, we kind of stuff. How receptive are you when you go to those seminars? Do you feel like people are looking for that information because it just hadn't been out there, or they still kind of reserve or hold some reservation behind it?
They are actually receptive. Mm-hmm. They really are receptive, and they are eager to hear, because I'm big on self-care as well, because mm-hmm. taking care of your feminine hygiene is a part of self-care.
Gotcha.
And so they actually are receptive of the information that I give them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, it's every now and then you'll have someone that, my grandmother said, it's but your grandmother, baby. Your grandmother was sitting in a tub of vinegar.
Look, I was going to ask you, what's one of the wildest words you heard, just generationally, that we might need to pull the plug on that one and kind of step into the new age?
One of the things, and this is the biggest thing, stop douching. Women do not need to douche.
Yeah.
All the time. I say says, women is the dish God would have created us with a dish attached to us. Like a self-filling oven.
Yeah.
But I take care of you. Mm-hmm. You do not need to be dishing. Like, mm-hmm. that's one of the biggest things. It causes so much problems, so much. It just throws off your pH balance, and it just makes you, it potentiates a cycle to where you're always having these issues of discharge and just foul odor, and it's just, you don't understand why I'm cleaning my, we're actually not cleaning yourself, you're messing up your pH balance.
See, that's why I say, like, we're getting into the weeds now, so it might be a conversation that I wasn't supposed to be privy to, but I'm glad you let me behind the curtains on the pig talk. Because this is information, like you said, over the years, it's just in our community, it's just, and like you say, ignorance is bliss. It wasn't nothing like that was passed down to us, that was done to hurt us. This is all things that we were done as far as hygiene, as far as the women, and some of the male things that we've learned, that just it's time to flip the page. And I'm glad that we have voices like you on the forefront and just speaking out about it and showing them, hey, it's a new day, it's a new era, it's a new way.
Absolutely. I think we all remember going in our grandmother's bathrooms and having that big vinegar bottle hanging behind the door. I didn't know what it was. But that's something, leave that alone.
Yeah, leave that alone. And look, I know you said, like, self-care is also, feminine care is also self-care. What do you do to kick back and relax? Like I said, you got a lot of school going on. I know I'm not going to tell it. So what do you do to relax and just get in touch with Ebony? Is it reading a book? Is it traveling? Like, what's your relaxation time? What do you do to get away?
I love to travel. Mm-hmm. I actually do love to travel, but I also love to stay home. I'm a big homebody. I love actually going to, like, farmers markets, food truck parks. That's, to me, relaxing. I love to try different foods. I love to watch Netflix. I love to, like, I love to do it all. But the thing that I love to do is just sit home, relax, and just chill out. Like, that's what I do to self-care. I unload, because sometimes, especially in my day-to-day life, my Monday through Friday, I receive a lot of
trauma.
Sometimes trauma, mm-hmm. from my patients. And I have to talk so a lot. You know, I don't usually talk a lot. But with me having to talk all day long, when I come home, I just want to be quiet.
I just want to be quiet.
I just lay down and I just, like, kind of unload, and I just relax. Every now and then I have to take a mental health day, mm-hmm. from work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I work in an area that it's called an FQHC, which is a federally qualified healthcare center.
Mm-hmm.
We take uninsured, underinsured patients, Medicaid patients, a big part of our patient population. We also take patients with regular insurance as well and no insurance. And sometimes when you're working with that demographic, mm-hmm. It's a lot of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there to listen, because a lot of times I'm the only person that has ears they can, you know, release it to. So sometimes I just have to come home and just, I don't want to go anywhere. I just want to sit on my sofa.
Just exhale.
Just exhale, yeah.
I got you. And look, like you said, you were quiet, you were reserved. Where did you find that voice at? Because I listen to you, I see some of the things you post about the silver. Where did you find that voice and that confidence at? Just for the young ladies that might be kind of shy, reserved, let them know that it is a confident woman inside of you.
You know what? Honestly, when I realized who I was in Christ, I'm going to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
When I realized my identity in Christ, that gave me confidence. I think the voice has always been there. I was just shy, and I tell people all the time now, I said, you know, I'm an introvert.
For real.
I tell some people in my life now, like even my pastor's wife, I said, you know, I'm an introvert. She said, girl, stop, you are not. I said, pastor, I'm an introvert. Like, people don't understand how quiet and reserved I am. There's so many people that don't even know who I am from Alexandria. They know my sister.
Yeah.
And they know my sister because we're like night and day. She's an extrovert, I'm an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when people compare the both of us, they see how more reserved I am compared to her. But the voice has always been there. I was just quiet with it. But I think, you know, when I learned and who I was in Christ, they gave me a voice. And so, and then I got to have a voice and be an advocate. Somebody got to speak up and get, you know, for the people.
Exactly.
So that's what I do. And my plan is to eventually get into legislation. That's my whole goal.
And I can see that. I can see that you got the sharp wit, you got the smile, you look like you're running for office today. You look like you're ready. So, look.
I want to get to the root of the problem of Black maternal health care. I want to get to where we're changing legislation to Because you got to get to the root. You got to change the laws. You got to change the laws. Changing the laws will change the care.
Speaking on that, how did you feel? Because I know, like, just like with the Marine, that's why I feel like you built for it. Marine Corps was a male-dominated field, and I feel like the politician ring is sort of that same type of realm with a lot of male. How did you feel when the abortion case was floating around? I think it's Roe versus Wade, and just having so many males, you know, speak on what it should take for a woman's body to function, or what a woman can and cannot do with their body. How did you feel about that?
So for me, I feel like. For everybody that's saying, like, I'm not going to say, well, I'm pro-life or pro-choice, but I will say this. If you're, you know, saying a woman has to give birth, well, we need to do something for the men, too. Well, the men that's making a lot of babies, make them have vasectomies. Mm-hmm. If you see a man has multiple babies that they're not taking care of, like a lot of these women have the same man on child support, okay, make him get a vasectomy, because obviously he's irresponsible. Mm-hmm. We can't always blame one party without looking at the other side of it. Actually affected a lot in my practice because, you know, I feel like, okay, well, the women have to have the babies now. They don't always have the money to have babies. Now you got to take care of these children. Don't make it hard for them to get assistance to take care of the children that they are having now. And I know a lot of the responsibility goes on both the male and the female part, but that's just how I feel about it. Look at both parties, not just the woman.
Gotcha.
That's how I feel.
And I just felt that it always just rubs me the wrong way because, you know, I have a mother, I have a daughter, I have a wife, I have women in my family. It just, to me, it's certain situations, legislation or not, that men should take a step back from and let women that's in power, you know, kind of guide you towards those decisions, because the female body is very complicated, way more complicated than ours. And it's...
They did too. They did a big umbrella over. Like, there are women that literally have dead babies in their bodies that they can't, that doctors are not touching them. They have to give birth to dead babies because they feel like if they do anything, that that's going to be considered an abortion and that the, you know, the laws are going to go after the doctor's licenses. So, like, there was this woman here in Louisiana last year when, right after the law passed, her baby, it has anencephaly, which basically the baby doesn't have a brain. Man. So the only reason why the baby is still alive inside of her is literally because her heart is pumping blood to the baby.
Yeah.
So she was forced to carry the baby to term. Man. So it's stuff like that. Is the law is too general. You know, not okay, this baby has no chance of survival outside the body. But it's going to be very traumatic for this woman to have to carry this baby all the way to term, give birth to a full, you know, full term baby without a brain. Like, that's traumatic.
Yeah.
So I think the law needs to change. And I do believe that men need to step away from the mic.
Very true. Very
let
true.
Women experience. Let the doctors and the professionals that actually have degrees in this have something to say about it. Now, I do, you know, pro-life versus pro-choice. That's, I think the law is too general because they have
people. It's just too vague for me.
It's too vague. They have certain circumstances. Well, this is an extenuated circumstance. Why would you make this woman carry a dead baby to term, to give birth?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, correct, because it didn't leave any wiggle room for, like, a rape or anything, like, no wiggle room for none of that, right?
No wiggle room, no. It was a big case last summer, at the end of last summer, with this 10-year-old girl. I don't know if you remember this, but I think it was, like, up in Ohio or Illinois somewhere, but this 10-year-old girl had been raped by this 27-year-old man, and she had gotten pregnant.
Yeah.
And her mom drove to one of those few states, I think it was either Indiana, to get her the medication abortion to take the pills for it. Mm-hmm. And then they went after that doctor's license, even though it's still legal in her state.
Wow.
So a 10-year-old girl, she's not fully developed, you know what I'm saying? So that right there, it is no wiggle room for rape.
Yeah, that's sad. Like, now, not to just flip the page too quick, but I did want to get this in too. I know you did start a business, you were running the business. How's that going?
My shoe business, well, I keep telling myself, I keep looking at, I need to get it back going. It was going very, very well. I love the shoes, so I started selling women's shoes. But when school hit, life, everything else had to put on the back burner, unfortunately. But I am still running my business. My business is still actually open.
Okay.
I have not bought any new merchandise since I've been in school.
Now, talk about that, being starting a business, because there's a lot of firsts that, you know, our generation is doing that, you know, like you say, generations prior to us, you know, they would kind of put your head down and work type of mentality. So, yes. You know, either we're starting with creating content, starting a business. Yes. I just always like to tap in and see how people with just their creative mindset, like, how was their process for you?
So that process actually wasn't hard, because I'm going to be honest, I didn't know what I was doing. I had my friend who's actually a nurse and anesthetist in Miami, and we were talking, and it was during the pandemic, and she's like, Elle, we should do this. And she's like, I could do, she started a lash company, where she started selling lashes. She helped me pick out the name, actually, for my business. And so that's been a very interesting journey. I was very surprised by the support that I got. My whole goal was to provide quality at an affordable price. But that's been an interesting journey. I've loved doing it. I've done pop-up shops. I had some invitations to do some pop-up shops this year, but like I said, school had me in a chokehold.
Yeah, I already know.
I couldn't do that, but I will get back to it. I still got my merchandise. My website is still up and running. But I just have to get some new merchandise for this year.
I just want to applaud you for just being a beacon of light in the community. Because when I was on with one of our other classmates, I recently did a podcast with Melshika, and she kind of shared to me, you know, after her surgery, and you know, she was kind of in a dark place. You know how it is when you go through something major and you feel like you're by yourself. It's after all the get well, I hope you're doing all right, stop, and then you're just in the house by yourself. But she shared with me that you actually was one of those people that kind of helped out those dark places and just shared some words of wisdom with that. So I just want to applaud you for what you're doing in the community, and just, you just don't know, I'm honored to just call you a family member and just see what you're doing. And I love what you're doing. Like I told you before we start, I'm a fan of all y'all that's just doing something positive, and I can't stop smiling enough. I want to see all my classmates, all my friends. I love to see y'all pushing forward and pushing the envelope.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I definitely appreciate it. That's my girl. Look, we encourage each other.
Yeah, I already know. And that's what we need. We need more of that love, loving on each other in our community, man. Right. It was so much put out, you know, with the negative, and they show the negative images about us. But we are a loving people when you break down to it.
We are. And very supportive. You know, a lot of people say that, you know, black people don't support black. No, we do.
No, we do.
We absolutely do. You just don't see it because it don't have to be broadcasted. But
exactly. Yeah, and people have to understand that the negative is going to get highlighted and magnified 100 times more than the positive. And that I always say that 10% or that loud minority, it just sometimes swamps, because it's not the majority of us, but it just takes us over, because that voice is, that's what they're going to put in front of your head with our music, our images. So it just get amplified. But just some of the other stuff is, like you say, you're doing your doctorate. What are some of your plans in the future after you achieve the doctorate? Because I know it's coming.
So after I get done with that, I actually want to jump into, you know, lawmaking. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to be, I don't want to become a politician, but I do want to be, you know, help write bills and help write laws. So I want to start on that level. I want to start lobbying for black maternal health. I'm actually on a consortium at my job for black maternal health, because my job is now, we have a whole coalition to improve the black maternal health rates, maternal morbidity and mortality, because it is actually safer to give birth in a third world country than in the state of Louisiana or in the United States.
Wow.
Black women are 3 or 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy related causes than women of other races, than white women, or even Hispanic women. And the thing is, 80% of those deaths that occur are preventable.
Wow.
4 out of 5 of the deaths are preventable. So we got to get to the root cause of why this is happening. So that's why a lot of coalitions, you see a lot more commercials about it, which I'm so, so happy that that's going on. But we got to get it, you know, we got to get it together. Just like you heard recently, Tori Bowie, the Olympic track star that died, she had preeclampsia. Well, she ended up having eclampsia and dying of eclampsia at her home at 8 months pregnant. So those things are preventable, you know, preventable, absolutely preventable. Even what's happening with breast cancer, black women are more likely to die from breast cancer than white women, because black women are not getting screened adequately or getting screened early enough. Although when they do find it, it's more advanced.
Yeah, it's too far gone.
So,
Can you kind of speak on that, like, for, and I know some people might feel like some of the stuff I'm asking is common knowledge, but it's a certain segment of our women that don't know. So as far as like checkups and pap smears, like just how often should they be going in and getting seen and just kind of knowing where they at?
So women, I tell all my patients, come in every year. My nurse calls are coming in and having a girl talk. Mm-hmm. You come in every year to have your annual wellness visit. Now, you don't collect a pap at every visit. I collect paps every 3 years. If they're negative, if they're abnormal, of course, we collect it more often and you have further testing done. Mm-hmm. But every year you come and do your annual wellness visit. Mm-hmm. Start at age 40, women start having screening mammograms done. Mm-hmm. They just had something in news recently. I've been doing this at starting age 40 since I started practicing over 11 years ago. That other agencies say age 45, but to me that was too, it was a lot that can happen between age 40 and 45. So I've always screened at 40 years old. Now they're coming out saying, well, the American Cancer Association and all these other associations have recommended mammograms start at age 40. I said, well, I've been doing that for 10 years anyway, so. but if you have a history of breast cancer in the maternal side, meaning mm-hmm. your mom, your mom's mom, your mom's sister, then, and if they have an age, if they are diagnosed with breast cancer sooner, like early 40s or mm-hmm. the 30s, then you start breast cancer screening sooner than that. Gotcha. And it starts with a screening mammogram. Of course, mammograms don't get everything, so mm-hmm. I highly recommend women, not educate women, I beat a dead horse with this, do your monthly breast exams at home every month, same time every month. Gotcha. As simple as feeling your breast, mm-hmm. seeing if you have any lumps, masses, nipple discharge, any skin changes. That's very, very important. Most of my patients that have gotten diagnoses of breast cancer found those lumps at home. In their 20s.
Yeah.
In their 20s.
Damn.
So
be your first line of defense is basically what you're saying.
Yes. You're your first line of defense. Mm-hmm. If something don't feel right, go get a scene. Mm-hmm. Well, I think, nope, go get a scene.
Go check it out.
Go check it out. Yeah. Go check it out because you never know. You never know. So breast self-exams every month at home, same mm-hmm. time every month. Do your screening mammograms if you're age 40 and over. Mm-hmm. Go every year to do your annual wellness screening exams. Paps every 3 years if they're negative. More often than that, if they're not normal. So, yeah, that's what I recommend.
Okay.
Well, that is what's recommended.
Now, when would you? I know you say everything's kind of put off on hold by now, but right now, do the schooling. But when will you resume? Because I just want to give people a way to tap back into you. When will you resume like your pink talks and some of the stuff? I know some of the stuff you do is ongoing because that's your job. But just some of the stuff that you kind of do outside where you speak and do stuff like that.
So I will get with my pink talks. I want to start doing that early next year.
Okay.
I would have liked to have it done. Well, I was supposed to actually do it. Me and my real estate agent were planning to do a talk between in August before school started, but that kind of fell through. So if I'm able to, I'll do it this fall.
Okay.
Not early next year.
Okay.
Early 2024.
And I know you're a busy woman. I'm gonna let you out of here. So what I do want to end it with is let people know how they can keep in contact with you and follow you and stay up to speed on your journey, whether it be schooling or your nurse practitioner journey.
You can follow me on the Pink Talk on Instagram.
Okay.
I think it's just at the Pink Talk. I don't think I have any underscores. And then my personal IG is BTHEEL. and then my Facebook is, I won't get my Facebook.
Yeah, you don't want people stalking you, man. It might get a little too excited.
So that's the Pink Talk. Anything dealing with the Pink Talk, anything dealing with me to be speaking, it's going to be under the Pink Talk Instagram page.
Look, y'all definitely tap into that. She is just a wonderful source of information and, as you can see, passionate advocate about what's going on with Black women's health. So it's good to get behind people like her and just let them know she has our support because, as you can see, she has plans in the future of just doing some big things. And you're going to want that type of voice fighting for you when it comes time to legislation because right now, like I said, I don't hate the term, but I strongly dislike strong Black woman because it starts to just disintegrate a lot of the other things that women go through when it comes to healthcare. So again, I just want to applaud you. Where the next trip at? I'm seeing a lot of these vacation pics. Where you celebrating this next milestone at?
I've been looking at the Netherlands. I've been looking at Bali. Because I want somewhere next year. I wanted to go for my graduation, but I'm going to send you an invitation to the party.
All right.
December. So sometime early spring, I'll be somewhere. I don't know. I'm going somewhere. Look,
if you feel like you're up on your health, but you want to see some amazing photos if you hadn't traveled, tap into her page. She has some amazing photos from her vacation. Love to see you out there shining on and celebrating life, though. It's good to see my cousin out there just enjoying herself.
Got to.
But look, I want to thank you for taking the time. Like I said, I know you're busy. You could have been doing a bunch of other things today, but you dropped in on me. I really appreciate the gems and the knowledge you dropped for the women, for them to follow, and also for men. If you have women in your life that don't have, you know, that proper care that you want to direct them to those proper health care resources. So I just thank you for coming through and dropping knowledge on me today.
Thank you. I think I appreciate it because it was so nice. And like I said, I'm so proud of you. Keep doing what you're doing because you are getting information out there.
Hey, I really appreciate it. And y'all know how y'all can keep up with me on IG. And then you will have access to this video on my YouTube channel. I newly launched that. So I got some things going on in the works with that. Okay. So yeah, you'll have your full video. So if you want to see this face on YouTube, tap into my YouTube channel. You get the whole video live, so to speak. Yeah. Not live, but a replay of it.
Yeah, good.
So I appreciate you dropping in. I always visualize your goals, and after that, accomplish those visualized goals. 9/11. Gone.